Wisconsin, it's finally here. Yuengling, oldest brewery in America, family-owned and operated for six generations, and now officially in Wisconsin. Whether I'm tailgating, watching the game at a sports bar, just kicking back, I'm reaching for a Yuengling. DG Yuengling & Son, Pottsville, PA. Enjoy responsibly.
Jesse and Tausch today on Wilde and Tausch. Jason Wilde on assignment. The Packers' search for a defensive coordinator continues. And for the latest insights on what the team may choose to do, we welcome back ESPN NFL Nation Packers reporter in one of the most highly anticipated segments in Wilde and Tausch history, Rob Domofsky joins the show. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
I'm great. Why would this be highly anticipated? Just another Friday.
Rob, I'll tell you what, man. You moved the needle last week. I don't know if you know how long you're going to continue to do this. I don't know if you can beat what you did last week. I don't know if that's going to be possible. It's tough. It's a tough bar to crawl.
Yeah, well, I got chastised from management, but you know, it is what it is.
Okay. Not for me. I can tell you that I was one of these. That was passionate. Your passion exuded, and that's what we're always looking for, is great passion. All right, Rob, what are we thinking? What they brought in Al Harris. There's been a bunch of conversations about other folks. How do you see this defensive coordinator so far, and what do you think is going to end up shaking out?
Well, Tausch, I think like most Matt LaFleur interview sessions or searches for assistants, he's going to talk to a lot of guys. He's done that for just about every job opening he's had, you know, especially coordinators. And I don't think anything happens until he can talk to Jim Leonard. I mean, I think Jim Leonard's high on his list. He obviously can't talk to him. And I got to be honest with you, there's some debate about when they actually can talk to him if the Broncos win. I was under the impression that they could talk to him Monday during that Super Bowl bye week, whether the Broncos win or lose. Obviously, if they lose, they can talk to him. And they're probably going to lose with – you know, Jared Stidham at quarterback. But then I talked to somebody in the league who said, nope, if the Broncos win, they cannot talk to him before the Super Bowl. Only head coach candidates can interview for jobs if their teams are still playing. I don't know if that's true. I mean, I scoured the rules, the internet, and I can't find clarity on it. But long story short, they're going to talk to Jim Leonard before any decision's made. And I think Jim Leonard's high on the list. I mean, Jonathan Gannon's high on the list. We don't know what Raheem Morris is doing yet. Is he sitting out the year? I mean, that's one of Matt LaFleur's guys. So I do think there's a lot of options on the table. I will tell you this, and you know, if you would have lined up, you know, 53 guys in the locker room in 2000 and what would that have been when Al Harris played in the mid 2000s, and said one of these guys is going to be a NFL defensive coordinator, I don't think Al Harris would have been first, second, or third on my pick list. But from what I've been told, he's become, you know, a really good coach, and players really like him. But I would have never guessed that Al Harris would have gone into this.
Rob, there was a conflicting reports again, and I don't want to get you. But there was conflicting reports, and Jason talked about it, that Jimmy Leonard was offered the defensive coordinator job, and then there was they talked about it. Matt LaFleur, obviously, if it seems as if from your perspective, is very interested to talk to Jimmy again. So that's not if indeed he was offered and turned it down, which is what Jason reported. There's no grudge holding. He would love to get Matt LaFleur would love to at least sit down and have those discussions with Jimmy. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding. And I, you know, I don't know, you know, it might be semantics whether he was offered it and turned it down, but clearly they wanted him. You know, it might be one of those things where it's, hey, if we offer this job to you, would you take it? And then he, you know, says probably not. So did he turn it down, or is that a preemptive way of not getting turned down? I think it's just semantics. But yeah, Jim Leonard in 2021 went deep into this process. And at the time, I was told he didn't feel like the move was right. One of the reasons, from what I understood, was that his family really liked living in Madison. And guess what, Tausch, maybe you know this, his family still lives in Madison, and he's in Denver. So Green Bay would be a little closer. I've got to check my atlas here. Yes, Green Bay is slightly
correct.
Closer.
Rob, you don't even have to check. You don't have to check your atlas. It is closer. I'll do the research
this
for you.
And
I don't love doing research.
It's a piece of scrap paper that I have a bunch of numbers written on it.
Yeah, this is actually a used Kleenex that I looked at. So we're both in the same boat.
He's a prop comedian now, folks. Okay, so is it fair to assume then, Rob, based on what you're saying, that the longer this process takes, the more likely the potential of Jim Leonard becoming the defensive coordinator?
That's a great observation, Jesse. I think that is 100% in play. There probably are still more people that LaFleur wants to talk to and interview. But, yeah, I mean, if they were going to hire – and maybe they will hire Jonathan Gannon. I don't know. If they were going to hire him, why not hire him?
They'd hire him.
Well, so what do we know about Gannon Ball? What do we know about Jonathan Gannon when he was in for an interview earlier this week?
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy who was highly thought of as a defensive coordinator in his past. And, you know, whatever you think of, you know, what he did as a head coach in Arizona, I mean, who has succeeded as a head coach in Arizona? I mean, it's been a while, probably.
Bucko Bruce.
And Wisenhunt?
Bucko Bruce was pretty good there.
Bruce Arians, right? Yeah. But if you look at, you know, Philadelphia's defense when Gannon was there as coordinator, was it only what was it 2 years? I'm trying to remember. One or 2 years he was there. He comes from a defensive back background. And Jeff Hafley came from a defensive back background. I think Matt LaFleur likes the idea of a defensive coordinator who sees it from the back end going forward. And I think that's, you know, some of the candidates, obviously Al Harris. That's the viewpoint he would bring to a defense as a former cornerback. So it does appear that Matt LaFleur likes that. Joe Barry was a linebacker's coach, if I'm not mistaken, and is a linebacker's coach again. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's a must to be a DB coach. But certainly if you're a DB coach, you see everything in front of you with the whole defense. So that could be attractive about Jonathan Gannon as well.
So, Rob, you know, a lot of times when these searches go on, I'll speak for myself as a fan, we hear names like Jim Leonard and Al Harris, and we get excited about those. And then you hear, you know, former head coaches like Jonathan Gannon, and then it often ends up being a guy like Jeff Hafley that comes out of nowhere, and that's the guy that they hire. Who's the Jeff Hafley option that we know of at this point that is just some random name that feels like it's a, let's just throw this one in, and he might be the guy that gets named defensive coordinator in a week or two?
Who's the head coach at like Western Michigan or Central Michigan or someplace, Matt LaFleur? I mean, like, I'm joking, but LaFleur did have a guy named Tim Lester on his staff who was the head coach at Western Michigan, and then he brought him in as a special assistant. I you know, if I knew who the mystery candidate was, Jesse, it wouldn't be a mystery, right? And, you know, I remember the day they hired Jeff Hafley, one of our college reporters, Pete Thamel, called me up and he said, hey, I think the Packers are going to hire Jeff Hafley as defensive coordinator. And as you guys know, I've talked about this before, I don't really watch much college football. And my first answer was, who? But look, man, you know, Jeff Hafley has a good track record. You know, and then once I looked in, I'm like, oh, yeah, Jeff Hafley worked for the 49ers, worked for the Browns, had been in the league before. Makes sense, right? But certainly it was a bit of a out-of-the-box hire at the time.
Yes, right, Rob, so that coordinator, obviously, that position, they got to shake that out. What other changes, if any? Mm-hmm. Because at some point,
yeah,
I know Matt LaFleur had a little bit of uncertainty there, and he had that first week where he couldn't really do much.
Yep.
If he is going to make a change at offensive line or offensive coordinator, what's the timeline look like for that? Because guys are getting snapped up if you do make a move.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, Tausch, because I've been asking that question for the last couple of days. And the answer that I've gotten from people over there at 1265 is that Matt LaFleur is still working through that. I said, is there any timeline on when we might have an idea? And I got a one-word answer. It was no. So clearly it's not settled, right? I mean, when someone says he's still working through that, you know, that means that he hasn't made up his mind, or he hasn't figured out how he's going to reorganize or approach things. But I think it would be naive to sit here and think that just because we're almost two full weeks out from the end of the season, two full weeks out from the end of the season, Saturday, tomorrow, that he's settled and he's not doing anything. That would be inaccurate thinking. I would have to think that if we don't hear something by the end of the day today, it would have to be early next week, because you're right, Tausch. Like, you got to get going, especially with him liking to interview a lot of guys. Then it just makes the process take longer. I do think there are changes coming. This is my educated guess. I'm not reporting anything, but I do think there could be changes on both sides. Well, there are obviously going to be changes on both sides of the ball, but there could be changes on all three phases. We can't rule anything out yet.
So your educated guess, what would your educated guesses be? Because I think the thought was, since Jeff Hafley got that Miami job, there could be three new coordinators. Jason pushed back pretty vehemently with me because he said the overarching theme, and when he talks to people over in the building, Rich Bisaccia isn't going anywhere, even though fans, and if I'm being honest myself, look at it and say, and I'm not going to get in the argument about how much he's getting paid with you, because we've had this discussion, and I don't want you swearing today.
Oh, God.
But we're not going to do that. But Bisaccia's numbers and the special teams hadn't gotten any better. But it sounds as if Jason thinks his culture and everything he brings, LaFleur ain't letting him go anytime soon.
I think Jason's, you know, it kind of pains me to say this, but I think Jason's probably right about that.
I think that's
an accurate read on the situation over there, and players really, really love him. You know, the other coaches on the staff really like him and appreciate him. He brings a morale to the coaches' meetings that's high energy and highly intelligent. But I also am with you, Tausch, man. The special teams haven't gotten a whole lot better. Maybe slightly better, but they're still not to the point where, they're a help more than a hindrance. I will say, in Bisaccia's defense, and we did an exercise that we've done before at ESPN.com where we redrafted this past year's draft, just did the first two rounds. And as I rolled it, I don't know when it's running on ESPN.com, but I'm doing fairly soon. I can tell you that I did not pick either of the two players that the Packers picked in the first round this year. And one of those picks I made had major special teams considerations. And no, I didn't pick a kicker or a punter or a long snapper in the first round. But as I looked at it, my point in telling this long, drawn out, boring story is that they haven't done a lot to help Rich Bisaccia in terms of acquiring guys who are special teams players, in terms of the returners, about using starters on special teams. I mean, it used to be, maybe this isn't feasible anymore with the higher injury rates, but it used to be that, as the season went on and you got to the end of the year and in playoffs, that the Packers used to use more starters on special teams, and they just haven't seemed to approach that. So that's on the coaching staff, but it's also on the personnel department, probably, because for not addressing special teams. I do think that people will like my second round pick, in terms of a special teams / return person who could have been an exciting player for the Packers if they had gone this route in the draft.
Oh, boy, we're going to have to check that out over at ESPN.com. I have a question about the offensive coordinator, Adam Stanovich, and really, if he were to either move on or be moved on from, what does the offensive coordinator do with Matt LaFleur calling plays? Like, what does Adam Stanovich do, and what would, if there was another offensive coordinator, what would that person do?
It's the age-old question, right? If you're not a play caller, what are you doing? But here's where I think, from what I understand about non-play calling coordinators, is that a large, large part of their responsibility is preparing game plans in terms of not necessarily saying we're going to call this play, but it's these are the plays that we have that will work against this opponent coming up. And the offensive coordinator would put together a plan of what he thinks are the best plays and the best concepts that they would do, this week as they're preparing Monday and Tuesday for the practice week, and presents that plan to the head coach, the play caller. And then it's up to Matt to sort of, and Jordan Love to sort through it and say, this is what we like, this is what we don't like. But just because you're not a play caller Doesn't mean you're not heavily, heavily involved in preparing the offense for the week. And then on game day, you know, his job is to sit upstairs and, you know, look at what's happening in games and help Matt LaFleur make adjustments based on what he sees from coverages and, you know, schemes from up top. So, I mean, it is a heavily involved job. The other thing, too, that the offensive coordinator does oftentimes is stand in front of the offense in the offensive meetings. You know, the head coach has a lot of responsibilities that take him away from that. So messaging is a big part of that. Teaching is also a big part of that. Obviously, Steno's background is on the offensive line, and you definitely see him spending a lot of time in training camp and in practice around the offensive line group, overseeing those types of things and stepping in and coaching hands-on there. So it is definitely, you know, it's not a figurehead job, for sure. It's an important job.
So is he good at it? Like, do we feel good about where they're at with what he's been doing in that role for the last several years, or is that upgrade spot?
How do you judge a position? You know, I've been doing this for almost 30 years now, and I'm not sure how I can tell if a position coach or someone like that is really good. Like, if their players play good, does that mean they're a good position coach? Or, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think we can all agree that, you know, guys, a guy like James Campen, you know, was Tausch's coach for a long time. I mean, you don't stick around the NFL as long as he has, not being a good coach. You don't take, you know, seventh-round picks, fourth-round pick. David Bakhtiari, right, fourth-round pick. What were guys like, you know, Scott Wells, Corey Linsley, you know, on and on. Brian Bulaga was a first. But, you know, more often than not, you know, guys like that were developing mid- to late-round picks and turning them into – not only starters, but, you know, Pro Bowl type players or high level starters. So I think you can tell there, like, because I'm just going to use this as an example, because Matthew Golden didn't have the, you know, maybe the rookie year that people thought, does that mean Ryan Mahaffey's not a good receivers coach? I don't know. But, and not to pick on him, it's just the first name that popped into my mind. Maybe he is, and maybe the offensive, maybe Steno on the play caller didn't do a good job getting Matthew Golden involved. It's hard to know, is my point, Jesse, in terms of, you know, a position coach, unless you're in the room and in the building. And, yeah, you can talk to players about a coach and say, oh, yeah, really, really like him, really, really thought he was a good coach. I mean, you know, who knows? Like, who was it? Sam Gash, the running backs coach, essentially got fired because Eddie Lacy was out of shape. Like, is that Sam Gash's fault? Like, I don't know.
Tausch, how would you answer, Rob, that? Like, what matters for a coach
Coaches, what is it? Teach and demand, and you're judged whether it's right or wrong on how your unit performs. So all of the things Rob talking, you know, Sam Gash, Eddie Lacy was awesome for a stretch. When it goes the other way, you look at it and you say, why is this the case? And the easiest thing to do is to replace the coach and get a different voice in that room. And I think what I was going to ask Rob was the O-line coach, Butkus. The O-line had a tough year. I am always going to sit here and try to tell, oh, this, they did this. The group didn't cohesively come together. There's a lot of reasons, injuries, a lot of shuffling. Right. You think he's back, or do you think that to me is one of the positions that I think Matt LaFleur probably is really looking at, however you phrased that earlier, is really looking at. Do you think he's back?
Yeah. Working through it, I think, was the phrase.
Working through it.
You know, here's – I'll be honest with you, Tausch. I thought they were going to make changes last offseason on both the O-line and the D-line, and they did with the D-line, made a change there, brought in DeMarcus Covington, and I was, you know, somewhat surprised that they didn't. Now, is it Luke Butkus's fault that – or was it Luke Butkus's decision to move Elgton Jenkins to center and to sign Aaron Banks at left guard? No, I'm sure it was not. But it's his job to, you know, to teach the techniques. And, you know, I don't know, watching offensive line. I could stand there till I'm 90 years old and watch offensive line practice and not know if they're teaching the right techniques or not, or if the drills that they're doing to try to teach their techniques are the right drills. And, like, there's also a bunch of other things, you know, when it goes into, like, okay – you know, do O-line coaches just teach the same drill every day in practice, or do they focus in on, all right, this is the technique and these are the blocks that we're going to be using this week in practice, so we're going to hone in on those. Like, there's different philosophies. Some O-line coaches just they work the same drills day in, day out, whether, you know, depending, it doesn't matter what the game plan is that week. Other O-line coaches will take specific things that they know they're going to do in this game and only zero in on those. Not saying one philosophy is right or wrong. It's just a different philosophy. But I couldn't tell you by watching it what they're doing, right? Like, I just don't know enough about offensive line play to know. So I don't honestly think it's fair for me to sit here and, you know, grade Luke Butkus or anything like that. But you're right, Tausch. Did the unit perform up to standards or up to expectations? No.
Yeah, and that's how they're judged. And whether that's fair or not, and the easy thing is to do something different to try to get a different result. But even though that's going to be another unit that there's going to be draft resources, I don't know what they're going to be able to do free agency-wise. But Goody didn't think that the group was good enough in Philly two postseasons ago. And I'm certain as he's looking 100%. At it now, he's like, ooh, we got a long way to go on this. Last one for me, Rob. Oh, do you have something? Go ahead.
No, I was just – sorry, Tosh. I was just going to say, I think the one thing that they need to try to do on the offensive line, again, just my opinion, is just keep guys at spots, man. Like, you know, I know you got to cross-train backups, but, like, they have mismanaged –
Jordan
might
Morgan,
be a strong
great
word,
example.
But I feel like they've mismanaged Jordan Morgan. I really
do. Agree.
But,
yep. So. No, you have to it's one thing to cross-train during the season – and you have to get guys ready to play because you're dressing six, seven guys. You have to let a guy grow into a spot. It's not as easy, especially when you're changing guard to tackle and then left to right. Like, it is a monster, especially for a young player that you have to build confidence. I couldn't agree with you more. Hopefully Jordan gets settled in at left tackle if they end up letting Sheed go, which we all think is going to be the case. All right, Rob, last one.
Yeah.
Best moment of the year for this Green Bay Packers team is...
I kind of feel like the two wins over Detroit were huge just because of the previous year getting swept by those guys. I'm sure there's an individual player moment that I'm not thinking of, but in the grand scheme of things, I mean, it just felt like those Detroit games were massively important and they won them. And I think this coming season, that's going to be replaced by the two games against Chicago. Like, I just think those are such important games and such important moments. And, Jordan Love, was it the Thanksgiving game against Detroit, was really, really good in that game. And, that was the Dontavian Wicks game, sort of
fourth
came out of nowhere.
Throw,
I just, those games stick in my mind as two, you know, if you were talking about high points of the season, I thought both Detroit games fit that.
ESPN NFL Nation Packers reporter Rob Domofsky. Last one for you, Rob. Tausch says the negative 17 degrees or whatever the temperature is outside wherever we live around the state today, that's better than when it was 50 degrees and muddy in early January. Agree or disagree with Old T's weather assessment?
You know what? Hold on here. This is a visual.
Oh, visual exercise. All right.
If these things, my golf clubs, are sitting here in my office, it doesn't matter if it's minus 17 or muddy. I can't play golf, so it's all crap.
There he is. And he kept it clean. Oh, well done. Rob Domofsky, ESPN NFL Nation Packers reporter. Thanks so much, Rob. We appreciate this. And thanks for not letting Hunter use the dumb button today.
All right. But make Hunter work too hard. You know, I'm sure he's having to manage you two guys. It's probably a lot of work in and of itself. So you guys have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
Appreciate it. Rob Domofsky joining us from ESPN.com, where he covers the Green Bay Packers.